It is Friday, and it is time for another edition of the Minnesota Beercast here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. I am Drew. You can hear me on Justice and Drew. That is Schmitty.
That's me.
Yeah, you can hear him,
here,
wandering around St. Paul yelling at walls or
no
random
yelling
alleyways here and there.
More mumblings in the alleyway.
And we are very excited and grateful to be recording this episode live from Republic at Seven Corners.
How do you record it live?
Well, we're here.
Okay.
We're live, and it's recording.
But by that standard, we're always live.
Right, but we're recording this week's episode from Republic.
we're in person at Republic, I don't know.
Which is awesome. This is our first time here as a show.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I was really grateful. I was excited when you let me know we were going to be doing the show from here.
Yeah, I love Republic, man. This place is a lot of fun.
If you're a fan of good beer, then you're a fan of Republic.
Yeah, we walked in, ran into the good folks from Founders here. They're doing a little bit of it's not necessarily a tap takeover, I guess, but they've got the end of the tap list is dedicated to Founders today, and I grabbed myself some KBS when I walked in, so it should be a good show.
Oh, is that what you got here? So what'd you get me?
That's the all-day IPA. You can have a couple sips of this if you want.
Thanks, buddy.
We've got a really fun show. We've got Ian from the Curious Goat. We've got Eric from Modest is going to join us. We've also got, I believe, Evan from Fair State is going to join us.
So yeah, we've got some cool news.
Yeah. We've got a whole show lined up, ready to entertain and amuse as we're known to do.
Another hour of talking about beer and food.
What more could you want?
Right. I mean, I do that every day anyway. I happen to record an hour of it each week.
Live.
Record it live. Thank you.
Let's get down to business. Let's talk a little bit of food with Chef Ian. Tell us about Curious Goat for those that aren't aware of what it is you do.
We are a food truck that operates outside of Modest Brewing. We've been there for about 4 months. We utilize local ingredients. We source from our meats from a lot of local meat purveyors and, just been steadily at it for about three and a half years.
What style of food are you doing out of the food truck there?
I think the best way I can describe it is like upscale bar food, kind of gastropub fare. We have like our staple items like the goat cheese curds or cheese curds, nachos, a poutine, and then trying to kind of flow through the other 60% or so of the menu with like pastas or different kind of sandwiches, just getting back into like smoked brisket. So like more meals, sausages, stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. I was there, I guess it was a couple months ago now. I happened to have some free time on a weekend and stopped in for brunch.
Yeah.
And you guys were doing like a Sunday morning brunch, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Awesome.
I think there needs to be more tap room brunches.
Yeah.
In my life and everybody's life, really.
There you go.
What was the inspiration for that? Just thinking outside the box, or how did that whole brunch idea come about?
Modest approached us. They had done one or two before, and we had tied in some Saturdays and had discussions about dates that, we could fulfill, like their 1 year or the Lord Humongous release, stuff like that. And then they talked about this brunch idea, and like we've always kind of been about that, just another opportunity to showcase different kind of food and, again, pushing the boundaries outside of a truck. We tried like every weekend through the winter, and that was just really tough given snow and driving a truck through all that and everything. So we kind of set on like a monthly type thing, and that's really been great through the summer. Father's Day was just insane, just awesome.
We're seeing more and more kind of really strong relationships and bonds being built between food trucks and tap rooms.
Yeah.
Are the consumers starting to, or have they always been maybe, and I'm just not aware, but are they starting to come like for the food and then just happen to also enjoy the beer? Or is it still more like, I'm going to go to the tap room. Oh, hey, look, there's a food truck. I'll get a bite to eat.
I would say it's a little bit of both, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we love about having the Goat Park next door is that when you come to the tap room, you know you have food available, and it's going to be quality food. The menu changes every week, and so practically every day, basically, other than the staple items. So, and everything's made fresh, and it's just absolutely delicious. So, I think those two things are starting to work together.
Right. And when you're mirroring it too with a brewery that is trying to change up what they're doing, or the infusions, or trying to put out different kind of beers, or it just helps that idea of you're coming to a brewery where, yes, you've been here 10 times, but each time it's a different experience. I've been thinking lately it's kind of like a Grateful Dead tour where every set list is different. So you'll still hear China Cat Sunflower, but you're also going to hear 12 different songs kind of.
How does it work with the food and the beer? Is there a specific simpatico relationship you and the brewers have, or is it just Keegan does the beer and you're he's creating his own symphony over here and you're writing your own lyrics over here, and if they happen to match up, great, but if not, each is their own experience?
No, I think it's a collaborative effort. I mean, I think there's some items at the Goat that are very key and near and dear to them, but thankfully they're all very beer-friendly type of items.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that I'm most excited about is you'll see Keegan and Ian cavorting in the corner, eating something and talking about it, or trying a beer and basically walking through what they smell, what they taste, and sort of taking it to the next level for us. And that's what's most important and most exciting for us about this partnership, is that we can do that. I mean, these guys can collaborate and sort of inspire each other. They're amongst the happiest and most creative dudes that I know. And, let them talk for a couple of hours and then they'll just go nuts. It's kind of fun.
With no beer.
No beer. Yeah. No beer.
Never.
Beer. Never.
Well, why wouldn't you be happy? I mean, you're making great food, you're doing what you like, and you're doing it in a great spot.
Yeah.
Collaborating with a fantastic brewery and working with them, it's got to be a lot of fun.
And I think it's just getting started. I mean, they're a year deep. We're there 4 months, but we, over the past 3 years, we've just kind of learned a lot of things. So, I mean, seeing where we can go with this group is, and, it's not even just Keegan. All these people are very creative individuals that, are really putting out a great brand and great product.
Are we going to see, a year-long commitment between you guys? Or is it, once you guys get into a knockdown, drag-out fight, are you guys going to go your separate ways and on one,
you,
only
trying to start
make love, not war, bro?
maybe, Modest only calls on the weekends after she gets drunk, and that's the only time you get together anymore,
As far as we're concerned, we've adopted them into our family. And I would like to think that they've adopted us into theirs. And, we went into this partnership thinking long term, definitely years and years and years of this. Like Ian said just now, we're just getting started.
Yeah.
We're just starting to scratch the surface.
Yep.
Well, when you think of food trucks, you think of, having the truck gives you the freedom and flexibility to take your food where your customers might be.
Right.
You can go different places. You're not tied to a location, but we're seeing so many of these relationships between food trucks and tap rooms develop. Is this something that could work as a quasi-permanent type of relationship?
Austin down in Texas, that's where this idea came from. Nico at Fair State came back to Sociable and told Jim, every brewery kind of has their own food truck. So we started at Sociable, and I think that symbiotic relationship can really be something that that can really be unique. And what we found especially is you got to want to change the menu. You got to want to be there. And coming from a restaurant, owning a restaurant for 2 years, looking at that, the overhead difference, it's why not take that, be open every day, commit to being there. And, having a trailer, hitching that thing up and moving it to where people might be, I'm not up for that gamble necessarily. So now, as I've been doing it for 3 years, it seems to make more sense, especially when someone's committed to the overall long haul directive of.
So I've got a bunch more questions about food, beer trucks, Minnesota, as everything evolves here. Let's get all to that after a break. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with the Curious Goat, Modest, and Fair State after this. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, recording live from Republic. Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to them for inviting us out. Really appreciate it. It's an awesome establishment. If you're a fan of craft beer, I can't imagine that you haven't been here. But if you haven't, then change your plans this weekend.
Yeah.
And get over here.
Check it out. There's some great happy hour specials. Definitely the place to be on a Thursday evening where we are now recording this live.
Thank you. Is that so hard?
Recording it live the day before it airs.
We're talking food trucks. We're talking beer. We're talking with Modest and Curious Goat, having a fantastic conversation. Love talking about the food and beer pairings and that relationship that we see, you know, just developing between chefs and breweries and beers themselves. It's fun to watch that, be a part of that, and watch that evolve.
Unravel, for sure.
Yeah, so when we left Chef Ian, one of the things I've been harping on for a while now is the lack of quality food trucks, and really not only the lack of quality food trucks, but also the lack of quality food at tap rooms and breweries around town.
Yeah.
Now, that's not necessarily a problem with a lot of the brew pubs, but the brew pubs, I think, are a dying thing in Minnesota. I think that it's very difficult to sustain a business in that place, or at least to open one in that place in Minnesota for a variety of reasons. And that's a whole other can of worms we can talk about another day. But I love what you're doing with the quality of the food and the different things you're coming up with. And my question is can we look for 3, 4, 5 different Curious Goat trucks at different tap rooms around town? Is there a possibility of you expanding your presence and edging out $11 tots with cheese from a can that if I'm hungry at a tap room, I've got to either I'm forced to try to order something from nearby that I may not want, or have some overpriced tots that aren't very good?
Right. No, and that's something that me and my wife talk about a lot. And when we came to Modest, you know, at Sociable, we saw nacho sales like crazy. And then you go to Modest, or I'm assuming anywhere possibly, and, like, you might not, we weren't selling a lot. So I was wondering, you know, have so many people been burned by a $12, $13 nacho that they see it on our menu? I don't care. They see cheese sauce. They assume it comes from a can. But then if they sit, they have a beer, they see another nacho go in, inevitably they'll come back again. They'll get something and they'll see that it is a little bit more. So I think the food truck movement, when it first started, I wasn't in it. I don't know too much. But I mean, like, people just saw it as an opportunity. Low overhead, go where people are, make a lot of money, and just find the best possible margins. Go to Restaurant Depot, cut all your labor real short by opening frozen bags. And, I mean, you see that through the whole restaurant industry.
Sure.
In a lot of different capacities. But, so, again, coming from a... And I think that's to your question earlier. Like, those relationships, you're relying on one another to fulfill your end of the bargain.
Yeah.
These people want to come for good food. Don't send out $11 stuff that you got from a freezer for $11 a case, kind of thing.
Well, I think the food truck culture has evolved to the point where the expectations are raised. I mean, I remember when, you know, several years ago when food trucks just kind of started to be a thing, it's not like it was bad, but you would
it was an experience.
From a food truck because you probably didn't have any other options.
Sure.
And you could tell that a lot, not all, but a lot of the food trucks operated that way.
Like, yeah.
You're going to order from us because there's nobody else around, so
you want to keep drinking.
Buy what we have regardless of what it is.
Yeah, right. That's just it. I've gone to a food truck and ordered a hot dog, and thanks for the moldy bun. It's like, right. what? Ah, that's not cool, man.
Right, especially if you continue to charge, like, a $9 or something like that. Like,
yeah, so, I mean, if we can't get the Curious Goat franchise, maybe at least we can hope that other food trucks will be forced to step up their game, right?
Well, and yeah, it's going with Modest. I think that will really help because they're helping us by putting out consistent product, putting their brand out there, constantly trying to do things in their tap room that are inevitably going to help our pockets. And in turn, like, you know, the walk-by traffic that we see of people coming for lunches or heading to a game that just want to grab a cheese curd, and then they're like, well, yeah, maybe I'll go grab a beer. So, like, we're seeing a very awesome symbiotic situation. But the franchise thing, you know, I talk with farmers all the time.
No, just think about it. Just think.
Looking for that Emerald Lagasse money.
Too, right?
What's that?
Said it helps that the Twins aren't sucking right now.
Right. Yes. Very
well,
much
you know,
so.
You mentioned the Twins, and you mentioned, you know, lots of people coming by for games. How big a factor does that play, you know, Eric and Ian, in the business model? How big an impact is that to you guys being located near that stadium?
It's huge, absolutely. We see a significant bump in business just by mere food traffic outside. I mean, we're still relatively new. We don't necessarily have the best signage outside our building yet. We're working on that. But there's a significant number of people that still don't know we exist. And, you know, you have the Curious Goat. It stands out because it's this bright orange park right outside. That'll catch people's attention. They see people sitting on the patio having beers, and now they're curious. They step in. They can have a meal, a really good meal, and they can have some beers and on their way to the game. And so now we've seen a huge difference even between last year, where we were essentially brand new. We launched right as Twin season started, to this year. We've seen a significant bump just in what I would attribute awareness alone and the Twins not sucking slash factor.
Yeah.
There is a definite correlation there.
I've been to a couple Twins games this year, and I've gone to Modest before every single game.
Awesome.
It's got kind of a cool tailgatey kind of vibe,
yeah.
You know, where you can sit outside, assuming the weather is cooperating. You can, or the doors are open. You feel like you're outside. You're just a few blocks away from the stadium.
Yeah.
You can park right by there.
So yeah, you're kind of in it, even though you're not.
Yeah.
It's kind of got that vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Do you guys see more pre-gaming or more post-gaming?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Does it depend on how the game goes?
On how the game goes, and whether or not it's an evening game versus an afternoon game, weekend versus weekday.
It fluctuates.
The demographics are really interesting, actually. So we'll get a lot of, clearly, you know, Twins fans going to the game before, and then the taproom clears out as they all head to the game, and then the folks who were just want to come in for a beer, maybe don't care about the game, or, you know, they're recording it or whatever, they kind of sneak in during those 3 hours, 4 hours at the games, and right as the game lets out, that crowd leaves, and then here comes the Twins fans, you know, and maybe they've had a couple of beers already in them, and they're hungry, and they want to have another.
Do you get those traditional Minnesota sports fans who leave in the seventh inning to beat the traffic? Do they stop at the tap room on their way out of the stadium?
Yeah, absolutely. You start seeing it. Like, we actually monitor when the game, like, how the game's going.
Yeah.
Because if we're off by a lot, then you'll see people kind of sneaking out at, you know, fifth inning or whatever. And then as it's getting close to the end, like, we ramp up. We kind of perk up a little bit because we know we're going to get that crowd.
Man, that drives me nuts. I don't know if I'm just not a true Minnesotan or if I'm just too cheap where I paid for the ticket. I'm paying for the whole game. Like, win, lose, or draw, like, man, I don't go to that many sporting events, but if I'm going to pay for a seat, if I'm going to buy $10 beers.
It's not just a Minnesota thing, because I've lived in a lot of places, and I've always been a beat the traffic guy.
Oh,
I've always been a beat the traffic, unless it's a really close, exciting game. But if the if the outcome is probably not in question, yeah, man. Yeah, I care about beating the traffic. That's what I care about.
Time is money.
Nah, I can't do it, man.
Dude, traffic infuriates me. I'm sorry. I can't. I get enraged. I can't help it.
Very good. Very good. I've got a ton of other questions about the stadium and how it ties in. You know, my biggest question is, you know, the simpatico, the nature of sports and beer, and I think it's a bit different, at least in my mind, how it identifies with craft beer. But do you guys have any sort of working relationship with the Twins or the stadium, or have their agreement with large brewers kind of blocked out any of the local brewers?
That's unfortunately the situation. So, you have an amazing pitch, right? Our salespersons, they can go and say, like, the product comes from a block and a half away. Like, literally, I can bring you a fresh keg almost, you know, exactly when you need it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, if you're concerned about quality, you would think that that would in itself be, you know, a win. But no, everybody's got things blocked out. So there's you see a lot of Goose Island and those types of things sort of permeating the entire stadium. And over the last few years, I've been going to the Twin Stadium, and you start seeing the Bauhauses, the Surleys, you know, others getting in there. Fair State, I think you guys are in there, right? And so that's awesome. Like, hooray for those guys. I mean, I will certainly reach for one of those any day, because I know the people behind those products. But it's a little discouraging, because you can't find them exactly at every kiosk. It's not so much of a longer walk anymore than it used to be. Like the one Surly stand that they used to have back, like maybe 3 years ago.
Yep.
You would buy like three or four of them, and you drank it by the time you got back to your seat.
Yep.
But yeah, it's unfortunate, and you know, this is what the big guys can do. They will just buy it out, and it's in a contract.
It's what the big guys can do, and it's also sort of a function of things as big as Major League Baseball or National League. They're always going to be slower to adopt.
Absolutely.
They're always going to be a little more cautious about what they add and when they add. I mean, it's like they're not going to take any risk,
right?
And they're not going to add something that is unproven. I
mean, so
it's both of those.
Yeah, no, but you know, not to take away from them, but they've actually given us a lot of support too. I mean, we've had people within the organization who love our product, but their hands are tied a little bit by contract.
You'll get there.
You'll
get there. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you guys are making an awesome product, and you're growing, and you know, you're so close. I can't imagine that relationship won't evolve.
Yeah.
Very good.
Skyway Lounge, straight to the brewery.
That'll do it for this segment.
Skyway to the brewery.
I like that.
We've got.
I'm going to run for governor. I'm going to make that happen.
Damn right.
We've got two more segments coming up after this. We're going to talk a little more about a little more food, a little more beer. We've got Evan from Fair State coming up after this. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 at 103.5 FM.
We're back on the Minnesota Beercast, recording live from Republic at Seven Corners. Thanks so much for having us out here drinking some fantastic beers.
Yeah, we got plenty of stuff to talk about. Let's get into the Fair State stuff. Evan, thanks for joining the show, man. Appreciate
thanks for
it.
Having me.
Absolutely. You guys have got an amazing event coming up July 15th. It's your Mixed Culture Festival.
Exactly.
Tell us about it, man.
Yeah, so Mixed Culture is kind of our opportunity to showcase our sour beer program or, you know, mixed culture beer. It's really exciting. This is the second one we've done. Last year, we had way too many people show up, and we weren't really prepared for it. So this year, hopefully, we're prepared for it. We've got 18 different sour beers that we're going to be having on tap for people to try. A bunch of these are going to be brand new, people have never seen before. A bunch of these I've never even tried in their finished form yet. So really, really good stuff that we're really excited about. We'll also have, you know, some clean beers for people to try. It's going to be a really...
You mean
oh, yeah, sorry.
You mean
a regular beer? Non-sour beer. Yes, yes. So, you know, I went out to Modern Times. They invited us out to the Sour Beer Festival like a month ago, and it was just like sour beer after sour beer after sour beer, and there was not enough Tums in the place.
Oh, man,
for me.
I have that problem.
And
I can't do it.
Yeah, but if you can get some clean beer to kind of even it out, some non-sour beer, it really makes your day go a lot better. So we'll have a whole trailer with a few of our normal offerings as well.
You're going to have an amazing amount of mixed culture beer. You've got, I think you told me, 18 while we were doing some show prep.
Yep. Yeah, so a bunch of these were debuting. You know, some of these things are like our old favorites. Our Lichtenhainer is kind of our smoked sour. We're going to be bringing that back. That's one that I know has been really, really popular among people. Kind of surprising to me. I didn't think that anybody but me liked smoked sour beers, but it turns out they do. We've got some really fun ones. We're bringing back Funkelweizen, which is actually the first sour beer we've ever made. We kind of reformulated it into a barrel-aged sour, and we're bringing that one back. We're debuting our barrel-fermented DuPont project, which DuPont is our kind of go-to saison that you can get in cans. And we're taking a similar recipe, fermenting it in barrels with a bunch of bugs, and that's going to be kind of our new go-to pale sour base. So we've got that. Some different fruited varieties, blueberry, passion fruit.
We should let them know bugs is not, it's not really bugs.
Oh, no, it's not like flies and, you know, all that stuff. Bugs basically meaning non-standard microbes that you use to ferment the beer. So things like lactobacillus or pediococcus that make the beer sour, various
yeasts.
That's
kind of where you guys get the name mixed culture from, right?
Exactly. So, you know, people will talk about, you know, the culture being the culture of microbes, and mixed would just be, you know, you're using a variety of different microbes in the actual beer. And with these sour beers, it's really exciting because they kind of play off each other, and, you know, maybe one bacteria is going to create one chemical that then the yeast will be able to take and turn into a really interesting and funky flavor. And so it's a really fun, kind of unpredictable thing to play around with.
Eric, are you guys going to have a mixed culture program, put all kinds of infections in your brewery? Are you looking forward to that?
All over the place. No, actually, you know, dot on that. I mean, you know, we're right now we're focused on clearly just meeting demand for our mainstays, but Keegan's already got the wheels churning on some of this stuff. So in the next year, we just sat down and looked at what the year ahead looks like for us, and there's some really cool stuff that we've got in the works. So
I guess for both of you, has it gotten to the point, have sours gotten to the point now where you feel like there's an expectation from the consumer base that a brewery offer some, or is it still a little young?
I don't know if I'm the best person to talk to, because people just always expect us to have sours all the time.
Yeah, you guys have become kind of synonymous with having that non-traditionally fermented. I don't like saying sour because I don't know if that's the best descriptor.
Well, it definitely turns off a lot of people. You know, we like to say tart, but if you talk to people, you know, you say sour beer, you know, that's a thing some people will know about. Nobody knows about, like, the tart beer category. It's pretty tough. It's something we struggle with talking about because people have never had one. It sounds like something you don't want to drink.
Right.
And it's not inaccurate. It is sour.
Well, and that's why I think you did a really good job branding the event, the mixed culture, because not only are you guys fermenting the beer with a mixed culture, but you're also, it's a celebration of, you know, the culture around the beer, because you've got more than just a bunch of beer on. You've got other things going on at this festival.
Exactly. We've got a bunch of food. We've got people actually, like, doing some educational demonstrations around fermentation aside from beer, you know, like things like kimchi and just other really interesting food items that involve fermentation.
Sauerkraut, you got some, well, I suppose it's almost kimchi.
Right? It's German kimchi. Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of going to be a really fun event, just the culture of beer and around beer. There's just so much to it. And so we're just kind of looking to push that forward a little bit. We're going to have some, like, live art going on. Hopefully it'll be a really fun day. Hopefully,
like,
the weather holds
up. Like caricatures, like when I go to the Como Zoo?
No, more like some, like, street art going on. So it should be just a really fun day. Hopefully a lot of people, and hopefully it's beautiful, and a lot of beer to drink at the very least.
Food trucks, a DJ I hear you're going to have?
Yep, food trucks, DJ. So it's 4 hours. It's from 4 to 8. You got to buy tickets this year. So you go to fairstate.coop. You can find a link to get tickets. You can find a link on our Facebook page. All around.
And how much?
We'll throw a link up on the.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes for sure. Go to Minnesota Beercast and find the link for the tickets.
Yep. So it's just $8 for a ticket. That gets you in the door, gets you a glass, gets you a few pours. And then after that, you can kind of pay for however much you're going to drink. It's not a one size size fits all beer fest. We kind of want to keep things open so you don't have to drop $80. Sometimes you can come and, you know, you can try something and just have a good day out of it. So you'll be able to pay for just a taste or a full pour if you want a full pour.
Nice.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. And that's July 15th.
July 15th.
From 4 to 8. And your website again for people who want more information?
Fairstate.coop. Since we're a cooperative, we get the .coop domain.
What is, in your opinion, and you've got 18 of these mixed culture brews to choose from. What's the one that's the furthest into left field since we're sticking with the Twins theme here today?
Left field being maybe a little wacky. I mean, the Lichtenhainer and the Grodziski being our two smoked sours.
Gesundheit.
Yeah, those have been out for a while, but I think every time somebody tries one of those, it really, really surprises them. It surprises me. It's a really fun beer. The smoke is really noticeable, but the way that it blends with the tartness and the other flavors that you get from the wild yeast and things like that, it's a really, really fun and exciting beer, and I think kind of a lot of the people that work at Fairstate think that those two beers are some of the finest things we've ever made.
You know, one of the things we didn't talk about this festival is that it's in St. Paul.
Yes.
It's at your new location.
Our brand new production facility.
Your Part B, your...
We call
auxiliary
it FS2 these days.
FS2. Yeah. All right. Tell us about that.
So, you know, state law being that we can only have one tap room in the state means that we don't get a lot of opportunities to show this off to the public. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to be kind of the first opportunity for people to get out there and see it. We've got a huge parking lot, so it'll be outdoors, weather permitting. But it's a really nice space. We've only been brewing beer there for a couple months now. Really excited about what we've been doing over there, and we'd be really happy to show it off to the public. And we got, if you're a member and listening to this, you could get exclusive access to some fun tours that day. So
very cool. I can't wait to see it.
I can't wait to see you there.
All right. We'll be back after this. We've got one more segment coming up on the Minnesota Beercast. You're listening on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, the must-listen Minnesota Beercast.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, we got put on a must-listen list. So you have to listen.
Well, I mean, if you're...
It's like when the Star Tribune tells you to, right?
Well,
that's sort of the social contract we have.
I'm a bit rebellious, so you tell me to listen, I'm going to purposely not listen.
Ooh.
That's just how I am.
I'm not even listening right now.
Right? No, thanks to the Star Tribune for throwing us on that list, and if you're a new listener, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a neat little surprise.
Yeah, if you like
congrats,
what you're hearing,
you know,
give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you're listening to us and share the show with your friends.
Right. We have a Spreaker feed now that's been added, and I believe, and I haven't even told Schmitty this yet, but I believe we are soon to be able to be found on the iHeartRadio app. So I'm working on that as well.
Nice. We've only been on there for like two and a half years, and now you can find us.
You gotta earn your way, man. You gotta earn your way.
And we are actually
that sass may put it off for another week.
Speaking of the show, we are looking for a home on Thursday nights. You know, as you're aware, the show comes out on Fridays typically, but we do record a little ahead of time. We're looking for a permanent home or semi-permanent home on Thursday nights. If you know somebody who's interested or you own a business that you think fits well with the Minnesota Beercast, give us a shout. Let us know. We're looking for a spot that can accommodate some rowdy fellas like us.
We're easy to find. Go to the Minnesota Beercast on Facebook. Just search for it. You can
Twitter,
shoot us a message
website,
that way.
We're all over the place. Yep. We're not hard to find.
That's right.
So let's get back to talking about beer. There's been a lot of conversation around the independent versus macro idea of beer in America lately. And I kind of wanted to touch base with Eric and the guys at Modest on this. Walk us through the scenario of events. So the Brewers Association came out with a label to kind of, I guess, for independent brewers to take ownership of their identity, right?
Of their independence, yep.
Tell us about how it all works.
Well, so this came as a surprise. I was, you know, just
monitoring the social media, and this came up, and I'm so glad that they did this. But essentially, they came up with a seal, and they did all the legwork behind the scenes. But it's a seal that identifies a brewery that meets a specific set of criteria as an independent brewery. And this is incredibly important in sort of our industry right now, given the times, when you have the big macros buying out what in the past were small independent breweries, and with the specific intent of sort of passing them off as craft beer and adding them to their portfolio. But we all know what happens when, you know, a big entity gobbles up a small one. You have homogenized product, homogenized raw materials, etc. And so this is a very deliberate attempt to sort of pull the wool over the consumer's eyes and take advantage of what we small independent breweries across the nation are doing, which is just putting out product for the love of putting out product. And so they're trying to take, you know, our share away, and we've kind of, you know, dug into theirs, and so they're scrambling a little bit, and they're doing these types of things. So the fact that the BA came up with this seal that we can all use, and it's been pre-approved by the TTB, that we can all just essentially plug and play into the use of this seal to identify us as an independent brewery is huge.
I was kind of surprised, number one, that the TTB, the body that's in charge of the labeling standards, said, yeah, for whoever wants to use it, they can go ahead and use it. Now, I'm assuming that means the people who qualify and the people who are allowed to use it, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And it's, I'm assuming, trademarked.
That's what I was going to ask.
And so you're not going to have a large brewer who's not an independent entity trying to use that graphic, right?
Absolutely. In order to use it, you have to have TTB approval to operate as a brewery. So you have to be TTB bonded. So any craft brewery across the U.S. that is putting out product is TTB bonded, right? So that's an easy one to meet. But you also have to meet the criteria for being a small craft brewery. And in order to do so, as defined by the Brewers Association, in order to do so, you have to produce less than 6 million barrels of beer. And that clearly leaves a lot of people out of the pie, right? You also have to be independent, so you can't be more than 25% owned by some sort of conglomerate or some sort of entity. And then you have to be able to brew and ferment product that is done in sort of the traditional way. So there's a sense of tradition there. So, you know, flavored malt beverages, as an example, don't qualify. And so that
starts.
You're
not going to see that on a bottle of Zima.
You're not going to see that on the bottle of Zima, as good or bad as that product might be.
So the main criticism I've heard, the quote unquote blowback from folks who may have some criticism about the seal, as we're calling it, quote unquote, the seal.
The seal
is that it's supposed to signify, an independent brewery, but if everybody's putting the seal on their badge, it shows you're almost part of an entire group, right? So how independent is your identity if you're a part of many, right?
Right. That's an interesting. That's an interesting angle on that. I just think what it does is it segregates this group of little guys, the guys like us, Fair State, ourselves, who are doing this for the passion of it and for doing something that we want to do in our communities, in our own state, in our own cities, from the guys that are coming in and trying to infiltrate that very thing.
Sure.
And so to me, there is power in numbers. So the more of these small independent breweries that actually adopt the use of the seal, the stronger this message is, and the more it'll resonate with consumers, because I'm not sure consumers understand necessarily what's happening yet.
And that's kind of my follow-up question is, for this to work, consumers have to know what that seal means.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep. It has to matter to them.
Absolutely.
So what kind of efforts are being undertaken to educate and inform the consumer consumer as to why you should look for that seal.
Yeah, and I think this is where, you know, the BA sort of leaves it up to us. I mean, they've basically carried the torch up until this point, and they've made this tool available to us. I think they had something like 700 and over 700 breweries sign up in the first 48 hours of craft breweries of the 5,000 plus that are in the U.S., right? So there's still some work that needs to be done there, but they've done the legwork to get us a seal, and it's up to us to carry that torch further. And for us, the education begins with putting this seal on our product. So we are going to be rolling out our labels. We pre-ordered a whole bunch of labels, so it'll be a while before they get on there, but we're committed to doing so. But helping inform the consumer what that means. So it'll be on our social media, it'll be in our tap room, it'll be on our labels, and we'll use the social to get people informed about what this is. And the more they see this seal across our city and across the U.S., the more meaning it will have.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how it's going to play out. I think that having that seal on the bottles is going to be able to give consumers an easy reference to say, this is owned by, you know, a small independent brewery. It's not owned or a subsidiary of, you know, large, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. For me, you know, a dollar spent, if as a consumer, if I can choose to spend a dollar with somebody, am I going to spend it with a small craft brewery that is trying to be a part of the community, or am I going to give that dollar to a macro that is trying to eventually homogenize the product and actually eliminate the choices that I think I might have right now, but they're actually working, that dollar is working against you in the future. Big industries like these look for margin management when they get to a certain level, and that means, that's a fancy way of referring to cost-cutting tactics, and that means eliminating specialty grains, eliminating, you know, specialty mixed cultures and those kinds of products, because that stuff costs money. And so you end up with fewer choices in the end.
Well, there you have it. We are out of time. That will do it for this episode of the Minnesota Beercast. Thanks so much to Republic for having us here over on Seven Corners in Minneapolis. Thanks to Fair State for joining us. Thanks to Ian from The Curious Goat. Thanks to Modest Brewing. We have a quick follow-up, download only. I'm going to talk to Evan a little bit about his take on some of the changes with AB InBev and their purchases as an award winner at Rate Beer. That's going to be download only. Tune in at Minnesota. Of Beercast. Beer. We'll catch you next time.
See it makes Cheers. Me a Cheers. Jolly good fellow.
So welcome to the special on-demand segment of the Minnesota Beercast. So we left the show kind of talking about the you know, independent, the seal, we're calling it, from BA. There's been a lot of disruptive purchases from the venture arm of, I guess, AB InBev, including some blogs and Rate Beer. And I wanted to, Evan, get your specific take on what that means to you guys as a brewery. You know, the purchase of Rate Beer kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was leaked by a blog who actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost influenced by AB InBev, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That was like some weird, solid investigative reporting on their part, like digging real deep into some stuff to just figure out what was going on there. Because it came out like a good year plus after the actual acquisition.
I don't even know how they put two and two together.
I read the article and I don't even remember or know.
But so I think AB InBev was a minority investor in, I think it's Good Beer Hunting is the
yep.
blog. And they did some investigating and like, hey, guess what, guys? Rate Beer has taken on a minority investment partner, and that's AB InBev, giant brewery conglomerate. And we figured maybe you guys want to know about that.
Yep.
And so there's been kind of an uproar in the brewing community. Brewers saying, hey, take down our ratings if you don't mind, please. And folks who have been part of that community for a long time are outraged, and some don't care. You know, there's been, a whole wide variety of reaction.
Yeah.
And you guys have gotten awards, some serious awards from Right Beer in the past.
We did. We've still got two medals hanging in our tap room.
And I wanted to get your perspective on it as a past award winner on what you think it means to the site, to that community, and as award winners.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I saw this blog post, I think it came across one of my social media feeds. I don't know, it was Twitter, Reddit, or whatever. But I saw that come out. It was like a Friday or Saturday night or something. And I read through it, and it was really shocking to me. And it did make me wonder, like, what is our future relationship with that community going to look like? And I think that acquisition is so different from a lot of the other acquisitions because Rate Beer is first and foremost a community.
Right.
And just because, you know, AB InBev or ZX Ventures buys it or a piece of it doesn't change the community, but at the same time it does. And it for us, I think this is something that we're still trying to suss out. You know, we made the decision that we weren't going to take down our medals. We weren't going to immediately eliminate all references ever to Rate Beer. And a big part of that is just because of the community. And, you know, what we want to do is build a community around beer, and that community exists. And, you know, that acquisition can't take it away. But at the same time, it's really tough to do something that is in some ways supportive of such a disruptive and counterproductive force in our world.
I think it'd be pretty presumptive to take down your medal. I don't think that ZX Ventures bought Rate Beer to buy you guys a medal.
That's definitely true. Unless I've got some really awesome friends.
Way to go, ZX Ventures. Thanks a lot. there's been some shady discoveries. Eric, you mentioned a post earlier where we were doing some show prep where there was kind of a statistician who did a post about some of the changes in ratings on Rate Beer since this acquisition has taken place.
Yeah, he basically did just basic math, so science. But, you know, there is no way that some of the ratings for AB InBev-owned products or portfolio to change as drastically in a positive manner in the amount of time that they've owned it, given the number of people that are a part of this community. Mathematically, it wasn't possible. And so I think, you know, behind the scenes, they claimed that there was some sort of error that they were aware of and whatnot, and they were very apologetic about that. But, you know, something that happened, you know, an error that happened to help them potentially had a negative impact on somebody else. And
sure.
No,
why wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And
these are all done with algorithms,
exactly.
And formulas. I mean,
absolutely, yeah. And so magnets,
yeah.
And a lot of
how
foil.
Do they work?
A lot of foil, foil hats. But
magnets,
but
I don't know.
But that's, you know, that's very, very, very disconcerting. And
yeah.
and just sort of just brush it off as like, oh, oops, yeah, you know, we forgot to carry the remainder or something like that. That's unacceptable.
Is it? Do you guys know? I mean, I'm not a big Rate Beer guy. I'm not a big internet forums rating guy. I don't care. But is that formula public?
I don't think so. No.
Interesting.
It's like the Coca-Cola recipe. It's like in a vault.
How important is it to you, like those, like a Rate Beer or say an Untappd or any of these sort of craft beer forums, apps, social networks where people go on and they share what they're drinking and they give it 4 or 5 stars, whatever. How important is that to you, you know, as the business owner? I mean, is that something that that people use when they make their purchasing decisions?
Yeah, I think so.
It's really tough.
It's tough. It's a tough world. I mean, you know, there's the personal side of me, just Eric, and I look at some of the ratings, and somebody gave us a 3-star, followed, you know, by a 5-star, and I'm like, okay, that's, you know, the 3-star sucked, the 5-star is awesome. Clearly, same product, 2 different opinions, right?
Right.
So you can only take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah,
but
that's kind of how I approach it. It's
right.
Like,
it's like, okay.
It's all subjective.
It's all very subjective.
Are you
going to
change... Are you going to brew better beer if somebody gives you a 3?
No, we're going to, exactly. Right. Like, we're just continue to do what we know we can do.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, by this three.
But it, right? still sucks, man. It still sucks. I got to tell you. Like, when you get a three-star or a two-star.
Yeah. Gary from
Damn
India.
It, Gary H.
Like, it still is a proxy for some sort level of unbiased review, though. So, you know, it can be useful where, you know, you don't want to look at any one individual review and be like, oh, I'm going to change my recipe. And, you know, we've certainly never done that. But
I think there's so much to be reflected in that, you know, be it marketing, be it education, be it, you know, which segments of the population you're not reaching in an effective way. You know, especially, Evan, for you guys with the stuff you're doing in mixed culture, right? You know, I think there's a lot more education to be done in that perspective. So, you know, I think that there are definitely some positive tools to see in those ratings. I mean, but
it's absolutely true.
Yeah. Well, for me, I play around on Untappd, but I don't. I hope nobody ever looks at the ratings I give beers and takes them seriously. For me,
I know exactly what you've rated.
I don't. It's more about promoting. It's like I look at it as an opportunity. Like, if I really like this beer, I want to tell other people about it.
Yeah.
And I look at the tools and use them in that respect.
I specifically don't rate beer because I want everybody to have their own experience, and I don't want them tainted by anything.
I like to share what I like. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, everybody, I love this beer. You should give it a try.
Sure.
You just want to hoard it all for yourself.
No, you're a beer hoarder.
I'm a good beer hoarder.
No, but what if I have what I think is a bad beer, and everybody else thinks it's great?
Mm-hmm. You don't say anything.
But that's why I just don't say anything.
But what if you love a beer? Wouldn't you want to? But, wouldn't you want to stand on the rooftops and shout it to the world?
Well, but here's the thing, right? There's no accounting for taste. And nobody used to say that. Yeah. Nobody used to say that I'm an expert by any means.
You do hang out with me,
right?
And you do drink
one star, one star, one bottle cap.
I give Schmitty one bottle cap.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Minnesota Beercast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for enjoying the bonus downloadable content. We will catch you next time. Enjoy your weekend.
It makes me a jolly good fellow. Unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.